This is Matt Wells at UN News. Well, the world's first global poll conducted during the COVID-19 crisis to ask people what their biggest needs, hopes and fears are, 75 years after the UN was founded, has turned up some surprising findings. One of them, perhaps, is the fact that more people in low and middle income countries than in rich nations called for greater global solidarity for communities badly hit by the pandemic. In an interview with UN News' Daniel Johnson, Undersecretary General Fabrizio Hochschild highlights the impact of the pandemic on people's responses and explains what concrete action will be essential in the years ahead.
I think one of the great paradoxes is COVID, on the one hand, induced this sense of isolation, this quarantine. People were more restricted in their movements than ever, than at any other time in 75 years. At the same time, the isolation actually induced a rise in global consciousness. And we saw that in the sense that there was a huge uptick in responses to our survey after COVID struck. That was one surprise. The second big surprise was the level of support there is for international cooperation. If you just follow headlines, if you just follow social media feeds, if you just listen to the debates in the Security Council, in the General Assembly in New York, you get the sense of a very fragmented, very contentious, very polarized world. But if you look at the responses to our questions, across generations, across political divides, there is a remarkable set of common interests. And the immediate common interest post-COVID, and this was the first ever global survey on people's priorities for post-COVID reconstruction, are better access to affordable healthcare, better access to quality education, better access to water and sanitation. And that against a backdrop, and this was the second main priority, that against a backdrop of the revelation and exacerbation of huge inequalities. So the second demand was a call for greater solidarity, a call for better support to the hardest hit countries and the hardest hit communities.
So in some ways, sorry to interrupt there, Fabrizio, but isn't there this age-old conflict between immediate humanitarian needs or immediate people's needs first, if you like, and I'm talking to you as a UN humanitarian, perhaps first and foremost, and the need for sustainable solutions? It seems that we've been dancing around this issue for decades, and shouldn't we as the UN be proposing some radical changes to fix today's most pressing problems?
I think it's very striking that despite this global health pandemic that inevitably was foremost on most people's mind, when we ask people about their long-term priorities, their biggest fear and their biggest concern remains the impact of climate change and remains the impact of species depletion and of pollution on our environment. So I think if we have to sum up what was hugely complex findings, if we have to sum them up, what people are looking for are both immediate action on improved access to service, immediate action on constructing an economy that is more inclusive and promotes less inequalities, but they're also looking for greater action on environmental destruction and greater action on climate change. So they're looking, in essence, for what the Secretary General has been calling for, and that's rebuilding back better. And by better, he means with economies that are more sustainable and more inclusive. That is the bottom line. And economies that really address the needs of those who are now most excluded, most discriminated against, and left furthest behind.
Right. So it's really critical then that the United Nations, that we deliver what people want. And how are we going to do that based on the fact, and given the fact, that the UN was founded 75 years ago, the world is incredibly different to how it was in 1945. How are we going to, as we the peoples of the United Nations, achieve what the organisation was set up to do, to promote peace, enable people's universal rights, and also leave nobody behind? Concretely, how are we going to do that? Because I think that's what potential critics would say of this kind of exercise.
Well, first, I think we have to be a little bit humble. It's not the United Nations, and the United Nations was not set up to replace a governance. It was set up to support national actors in areas where international cooperation is likely to contribute to the better global good, and in particular, when global goods like global peace and security, like global respect for human rights, like action against climate change, where global public goods are threatened. So I think the challenge for the United Nations that emerges from this survey and from much other work that's been done, we also reviewed all the scientific literature, we reviewed everything that was coming out of think tanks and universities across the world. And what emerges is a demand for a United Nations that does not pretend to surrogate governments. I mean, the provision of basic services is first and foremost the responsibility of national authorities. The United Nations can share best practices, can adapt measures to encourage that, but that's not our role. I think the unique role of the United Nations is facilitating the responsible management of global public goods. And one of the global public goods is our climate. One of the global public goods is our environment. Peace and security is another. Human rights is another. And so I think there's also a demand for a better understanding of what are today's global public goods, you know, which have evolved since the UN was founded, more focus on those, and in some cases, better empowerment of the United Nations in that respect. Global public health in an interconnected, interdependent world is a public good, and yet the mechanisms we have in place seem to need greater empowerment to better deal with the threats to global health. I think what's in demand is a UN that is more inclusive, that those who have their hands on the levers of power, the diversity of actors in the world is very different from what it was 75 years ago. And if the UN is to be relevant, it has to better reflect the diversity of stakeholders. And then it has to grow more focused and more effective in addressing what are truly global public goods. And I think the Secretary General will be coming back on the demand of the Security Council, a demand that was nurtured by our work with very concrete proposals on how to go about that. But the key thing will be ensuring that there's the public will to put those recommendations of the Secretary General into action. So continued support for the greater global consciousness, the greater global concerns that emerge from our survey to construct that political will be essential in the months to come.
It's interesting, some of the findings of the survey, that there was more support for international cooperation in poorer countries than there is in more developed countries. So I wonder, does that perhaps influence how the UN might operate in future? And we could perhaps also touch on the calls for reform within the United Nations too that were thrown up by the survey.
Well, if I may add a nuance there, it was a little different. The calls for international cooperation, which were very strong everywhere in the world and grew stronger post-COVID. In fact, the highest degree of support for international cooperation, and this might seem ironic, came from the Americas. There were also greater calls, and this is notable, for international cooperation. There were stronger calls among women than men, and there were stronger calls among the youth compared to the older generation. So I think the young people understand much better just how interconnected and interdependent the world is, and that international cooperation is not a question of any political vision, not a question of any ideology. It's a question of pragmatism, enlightened self-interest in an interdependent, interconnected world. Where there was a distinction, a rather frightening distinction between the more developed countries and the less developed countries, was in the call for global solidarity and support to the hardest hit communities. And there we saw among the poorer people, among the poorer countries, a greater demand for solidarity, a greater demand for support than among the richer countries. And that, having said that, there was still a strong demand in some of the richer countries. But that is a little bit striking. I think one of the worrying things about COVID and the economic damage it's wrought and the social damage it's wrought is there is a very real danger that the more developed countries will grow more inward-looking, more focused on addressing their own needs, which of course are essential. And nobody's disputing that they should address their own needs. but there might be a retreat from global solidarity, which our work also highlights is absolutely necessary.
Yes, so really that brings me to my final question, and it was whether the UN itself has a bright future in addition to multilateralism. And I should say that we're speaking a day after supporters of President Trump stormed the US Capitol building, temporarily halting the disputed certification of November's presidential election result. In addition to that astonishing development, we've also had, of course, the whole COVID ordeal that you've spoken about, and all sorts of toxic disinformation and distrust online of institutions and indeed vaccines. It kind of makes you wonder how we can boost faith and hope in international cooperation, which is clearly so essential. You can't do these things on your own. You can't overcome something like a pandemic on your own. I mentioned the calls for reform that were thrown up by the survey. Could you maybe touch on those, please?
One of the things we have to be very mindful of, and I see this as somebody who served the UN across all continents and often in conflict areas all my life, is two findings. One, that the UN has very broad support. There's no question of that. And it's seen even as more important moving forward than it was over the past 75 years. But at the same time, the UN is seen as rather remote, and people are not, 50% of the people are not aware of how it's had any direct impact in their lives. So the UN is supported, but we're also seen as a little bit out of touch and a little bit remote. And I think one of the things, one of the challenges for all of us is to get the UN out on the streets. I mean, the UN cannot be seen as something locked behind compounds with massive fences where an elite of diplomats, an elite of international public servants discuss the problems of the world among themselves. We have to get out of our white Land Cruisers in the field, and we have to get out of our office blocks in Manhattan and Geneva and Addis and Santiago and help grow an understanding that the UN is not some remote bureaucracy. We're all the UN. In an interconnected, interdependent world, everybody is the UN. And that also means not just us getting out and listening better. It also means bringing civil society, youth, business, local leaders much more into our buildings, much more into our decision-making processes. And I think that's going to be a key aspect of the reform. I think that's a key demand of how the UN can grow more inclusive. And I think the Secretary General will come forward with very concrete suggestions in that regard. I mean, there's already been big progress in that. I mean, in my career in the United Nations of High Commissioner for Refugees, which I served for close to 20 years, I saw during those two decades how the role of civil society actors changed dramatically and how they grew in voice in UNHCR. I think the more political parts of the UN still have some way to go to better integrate the voices of diverse stakeholders. But that, if we're to remain relevant, and that, if we're to remain to grow in impact, will be absolutely critical, and no doubt will be the content of very concrete suggestions.